JC. TO4 NUE. Good morning, Jerry. How are you, sir?
How you doing?
Just headed to Simpsonville. Drop off some Thanksgiving stuff for Mom.
So survive your Thanksgiving ordeal.
But we made it.
We used to have a big get-together Thanksgiving when everybody was together, when all the folks were still living. But gosh, it was always a big deal, to a lot of stress involved, getting everybody together and all that sort of thing. It should have been a pleasant time, but it was unpleasant getting ready for it.
Tired afterwards, but I tell you though, Jerry, we had a meal with just the kids on Wednesday, and I don't guess it really hit me till then that Meemaw wasn't with us this year. And boy, I'm telling you, boy, it got hold of me. I'm telling you right now that was rough. Anna and her sister do a bunch of antique shopping. So they had went and bought some, small plates and stuff to go on the Thanksgiving table, antiques. And they brought back two shot bowls. And they were sitting at the table commenting that they don't know why they were called shot bowls. I told her about growing up, with 180 acres of cotton. We used to dove hunt every year. And granddaddy paid, I won't get into that, but anyway, he worked for us. So we would, kill a bunch of birds for Thanksgiving, doves. And Meemaw would make dove pies, and we'd all sit around the table, all, 12 of us. And she had two square-bodied half-pint mason jars she kept on the table. So when you bit into, a piece of dove meat and had shot in it, you threw it in the shot bowl. So, I don't know, I got talking about that, and boy, it just it hit me bad.
All it takes is just something like that, or just a brief memory or something, it brings it all back. Yeah, I've heard of those things. They used to have them in South Georgia, really eat instead of paper plates and corral. And down there, of course, just already quail season opened about that same, right before Thanksgiving. And that's the first thing they go quail hunting. And that's what they did down there. They'd have maybe, I think I remember what the limit was back in those days, Chad, a lot more than it is now. Of course, a lot more birds then than there were now, too, than there are now, too. But you talk about the shooting doves. Now, we'd have doves shooting stand there. It was a little more liberal about how you could what kind of field you could shoot over. Let me drop this thing. What we'd do, we'd let the hogs out in the corn down there. After the corn already, just seed corn. And then we let the hogs out there. And of course, the hogs would eat rattlesnakes were out there, too. So we shoot over those fields like that. And I can do it now because of the statute of limitations. I've shot 100 in the afternoon before, I guess. And when we sat down, we were barbecuing. My cousin said, did you shoot every dove you shot in the breast? And I was shooting 7.5 like this, Chad. And them 7.5, they're little, but they ain't that little. You get one between a couple of molars now, you'll have some pain.
I know exactly what you're saying, but when I was little, when I say little, Daddy let me start hunting. I wanted to go at, I believe it was 8 years old. We didn't have a lot of money. All he had was old double-barrel Fox shotgun, 12-gauge. And he tried to drum up a 410 for me, but couldn't find one, so I was stuck with the 12-gauge. But we reloaded, so he dropped the powder loads as much as he could so I could, be with the guys and shoot. I don't know, I got through box maybe a box and a half of them, and my little old shoulder just turned black and blue. And it just absolutely killed me that I just couldn't hunt with the big guys. I wanted to be big like them, you know. So I went over, walked through the cotton field, went to Meemaw's, and started crying when I got in the house. She wanted to know what was the matter, and I said, well, my shoulder hurts bad. Meemaw, I can't hunt. She said, come in here and sit down. So she got a piece of bunting, and she sewed that in my shirt on the right shoulder. Oh, I don't know, it's probably 3/4 inch thick. It didn't do much, but she, you know, it psychological for me, you know. So she sewed it up and, you know, make sure it fit, and go get your gun, let's look at it. So I was tickled to death. So she said, you get back up there and kill me some birds now. I just took off, you know, went up there and hunted. I made it through another box and a half, but it still hurt me so bad I couldn't do it. But, I miss that woman. She was just something else, Jerry.
My grandmother was like that. She didn't want me to shoot a possum. She wanted me to catch him and put him up and feed him. Yeah, because they were that great during the Depression. You know, people don't realize now what it was like then. But you know, a lot of people had a hard time getting enough food to eat, and yeah, they'd eat whatever they could catch or kill. And she said, "Oh no, don't shoot him. If I find one out about, don't shoot him. You know, catch him. Let's pin him up." I said, "I ain't gonna pin that thing up." And you know how possums are. They of course, they eat copperheads, and they're good for that, but, you know, they hiss at you, and they'll bite you, you know, just nasty animals, nasty-tempered things. And I said, "I ain't touching that thing." And she got one of the ladies to work for her. She got her to go out there, and she had that thing pinned up, put him out there in the old dog pen, and I said, "Lord of mercy," I said, "any of my friends see that thing sitting out there, they're going to think we country gone to town for sure."
My father used to catch possums, and he'd put them up the pen and feed them out, he said. So he'd give them some good food for a couple weeks. I always threw buttermilk in with what he was mixing in there. And, get them cleaned up, he said. And I remember eating possum. I didn't care too much for it, but, you know, he did what you had to do. But I remember him sitting at the table, old possum, just greasy. I mean, just really greasy. And that old possum fat run down his beard. He'd squeeze it out in a napkin. I just, golly, Jerry. Ooh, that's kind of rough. But, you know, just the way we grew up, that and mud turtles. Meemaw'd make some mud turtle stew. He wouldn't believe.
Any possum, but I've been around it. If I didn't, it didn't happen. I didn't have any appetite for that at all. And I really wouldn't. You know, we didn't do much as far as turtles or anything. But I had a good friend of mine that worked with me. It's been years and years ago now. He knew how to dress a turtle out, and he made some good turtle stew. Now, it wasn't anything like what I thought it would be. But he made some good, real good turtle stew. I never had that. Was something I wasn't exposed to, because we'd fish for bream and bass and still catfish and stuff like that. But we never tried to get any turtles or anything like that. But that stuff was good when it's done right. It's as good as anything, about as good as anything else I can think of. But you really got to know what you're doing to dress them right and get the right meat out and all, because some of it ain't worth cooking.
You're exactly right. When we first married Anna's from Mississippi, well, Greenville, back when, up until we married, you know, pretty rural where I am. But she, you know, if you didn't go to, you know, pizza place to get it, I mean, her cooking out for her was going to get takeout. She didn't know how to cook nothing. But Matter of fact, first meal she like cooked for me, she like killed me, literally. But anyway, I killed a squirrel, a couple of squirrels out there in the yard, and I do like squirrel. And I said, here, I want you to cook it, and cook these squirrels. She tried. She put them on a baking dish, Jerry, and baked them where I'd dressed them out. That old meat just pulled on the legs. It just shrunk up, and it's about a half inch of bone sticking up. Oh, it looked like a big old rat on the plate. I just couldn't do it. I could not do it.
Love squirrel, love to hunt and cook meat. I'm telling you, I always put it in a pressure cooker. The old ones, I was teaching my wife one time, it's been years ago, about bringing some home. She said, you put that thing on my stove? I said, do you have to buy me a new stove? Because I ain't putting nothing else on it. And she said, if you put it on the grill like that, I said, you're going to have to throw the grill away because I ain't eating anything that looks like a rat.
Right, so we didn't game you bring in the house. I always had to take it to me, Ma, because she did it. Looking back on it, she probably did it that way so she wouldn't have to cook it again. Instead of saying no, she just made it so I complained, I guess, but I don't know. I'll never know. But at any rate, she's not good at cooking stuff like that. But me, Ma, boy, I'm telling you, she could take, some awful-looking stuff and turn it into something really, pleasurable to eat if you could get past what it was.
She's a really good cook. She came from her mother and grandma, both were home economists for the county. And she's a real good cook, but she cook, we cook duck and quail and doves and stuff like that, trout, bass, about anything. She don't like much. She don't like me dressing catfish. I brought some home. They've been one of these fertilized, where you pay to go fish years ago. She said, that was a steak that's been filleted and cut up, but don't bring it back in and dress it here. But she's a good cook. She don't mind most stuff. She draws a line at squirrels and anything like that. And she told me sure one time when she was just a little girl, at her grandmother's house, and they put out a rabbit box to catch a rabbit. And went and caught that rabbit. And of course, her grandmother skinned it, cleaned it, and all that, and gonna make rabbit salad out of it. She said, we had that stuff. She said, I just couldn't eat it. She said, that thing was hopping around out there just not long ago. She said, I just couldn't eat that thing at all. So anything like that, you can forget about a rabbit.
Well, was our favorite. I mean, I don't make it sound worse than it was, but, boy, when I was little, we just didn't have much at all. And, Dad worked for Daniel Construction Company as a welder. Didn't have no benefits, and everything we had, the bills eat up everything we had. So we raised chickens, pigs. We had pigs every year, and Dad did what he had to do. But we didn't refuse anything to come along, pretty much within reason. You did what you had to do. But I do miss that, coming out and spending time with Dad or Granddad with the shotgun, trying to get your evening meal. That was, that was a bomb diggity as a child.
Yeah, that kind of, we did, I was the only child, so we did pretty good. My daddy was a rural mail carrier. He started working at the post office after he got the army in 45, 46. He had a good job. My mother worked at a bank, so we had two good jobs there in town. But their parents, they were just from a whole different generation. My grandfather was born in 1869, so you can imagine, what kind of life he had. and they just, you know, they had, you know, families had 8 or 9 children then. It was just hard to make ends meet. But her grandparents, one set of grandparents were teachers. Her grandmother was a teacher and a home economist, and her grandfather was a county school superintendent in Elbert County. And her other set of grandparents, one of them was a mechanic. He was a Chevrolet mechanic in Royston, and of course the grandmother was a 100th homemaker. They had chicken houses. They didn't have to, you know, they had plenty of food there. Didn't have to worry about that. But her daddy farmed for about 2 or 3 years, and said that was her mother said that was the hardest 2 years of our lives before we got him a job doing something else.
It's KO4NUE with N4DJC. You're exactly right. It was hard. And matter of fact, when I got ready to graduate high school, Dad, I didn't get in trouble growing up. I just stayed mischief, you know. I never been in trouble with law or anything, but I just stayed right on that line, you know. So Dad kept me busy. So anyway, I got ready to graduate high school. He'd come back from a John Deere place there in Spartanburg one day and had 3 headlights for the tractor. And it took me a couple of days to figure out what was happening or what was fixing to happen. And I thought, oh, Lord, he's going to start working me at night. So I just went down to the recruiting office, joined the Army, came home, told them both that, hey, I signed up, I joined the Army, and he put the lights on anyway, but he didn't work me at night. But looking back, I probably just should have stayed at home.
That's pretty good. I ain't heard that's about as good a reason for any joining I can think of for working. You, well, he's gonna work me all night long, man. Work me during the day, work me all night long. I better do something in a hurry. That's a pretty good story there, Chad. Oh, Lord, verse, that brings back memories. But, our grandparents were different. They just come from different thoughts, I guess. And people are now, I appreciate what I got, we didn't have it nowhere near as hard as people before us did. And it's just amazing what they went through back during those years, back during the 20s and 30s. They just didn't have, people didn't have it. They don't realize people didn't have anything. Even the people that had money, they had property, land, but they didn't have any money. Couldn't pay the taxes on them sometimes. And the people who weathered the depression that way, that's the ones that wind up being rich afterwards, because property and land's always going to be worth something.
And that, but at any rate, like I said, we were just sad when me and Ma passed with the funeral and all, but we just all put it aside, I guess. The whole Hightower clan came over, and we always went to Meemaw's for Thanksgiving and Christmas, but so we decided to host this year, just keep the family, you know, coming at the holidays. But boy, it hit us all. I mean, it was just obvious that Meemaw was not there. It's just kind of like just a presence, you know. She didn't have to say nothing. You just knew when you walked in the house that, you know, Meemaw was there. And I don't know. It just was strange, Jerry. It was really strange.
But I got an oak cat rat that my daddy used for years in their house. Of course, when my mother passed away, we sold the house, took that stuff out of it, and we still got it. And it's got a couple of his hats on it, and you still smell him on those hats. That's just, we keep that stuff, and people ask why. It's just memories, you know. Some of that stuff's just hard to part with. It doesn't make any sense to some people, but to some it does.
It's full of that kind of stuff. I guess I need to write down what some of that stuff is. But I don't know. It was I mean, it was good Thanksgiving, and I was thankful for getting the family together and all, but you could just tell it was just really different. But I mean, that's the new norm. It is what it is, and we'll make it work. But I will tell you this. The cousins came, and my first cousins, three boys, and we're all married, got kids. But we get along. We cut up pretty bad. So one of them decided they're gonna bring some spirits. And Meemaw didn't allow spirits in the house. They brought some spirits, and it kind of broke the ice a little bit, you know. So his wife, hang on, let me let this drop. KO4NUE with N4DJC. His wife is my cousin's wife is German. Had a visa, work visa, worked as an au pair. He met her, got married, so she's a naturalized citizen, but fluent German. So she, you know, had a couple of drinks, and oh, I'm gonna tell you, that German just, nobody knew what she was saying. We got a feeling that she's probably cussing all eye towers out, but she let it go. We just laughed.
It takes a little lubrication like that to lighten the situation up. One of my wife's uncles was married to a girl from Germany, and she was just as pleasant and talkative, but she'd get mad, she started talking, speaking German, and then we'd have to figure out what she was saying to make sure we weren't all catching down the coast. You should forget all about the English language and start talking in German.
She's a good girl. She's, you know, she fits right in with Hightowers, but we all gang up on her, you know, and she fights back. I mean, that's why we do it, just, you know, for her fight back. But it takes a little while to get her riled up. But once you get her going, and we get her to the point to where she starts speaking German, we all just grin, start clapping. we did it.
Well, it sounds like it wasn't as bad as you thought it was going to be. At least it seems like it wasn't anyway. But like you said, sometimes those memories come flooding back, and it's hard to forget those things. They'll come back every once in a while like that. It's been years ago since my folks passed away. And every once in a while, we get to talk about stuff, look at photo books and stuff, remember things. That's one thing we still do. We still take a lot of pictures and stuff. And people don't do that much anymore. They record it and put it on Instagram or on Facebook. That's about it. But we still print out photos. I've got thousands of photos, I guess. And ain't nobody else interested in them but us. I don't get a chance. So I guess we'll just let them go whenever we're going. I guess somebody will. Sometimes people, you know, wish they kept stuff like that, but you know, that's the way it goes. But it's important to us, so we still enjoy looking through them.
4NUE and 4DJC. So here's what's going to happen. Everything we and Anna have talked about this extensively is that the digital age, you know, you just take a picture and you throw it on your phone, or you throw it in a Google account, or you put it on a thumb drive or something like that. You know, those stuff, data gets corrupted, things get lost, you know. What's on this CD? Oh, I don't know, throw it away. That kind of thing. So we do that too. We take photos. Matter of fact, we went and bought us a photo printer. Just for photos. And you put it on a SD card and you print them right there in the house. So we keep that, the ones we want, because we know the digital stuff may not make it. You know, kids think it's crazy, but you know, we've already seen we've lost some pictures from the kids growing up. Don't know where they are. If we'd had it on a photo, we probably wouldn't have lost it.
Starting to doing it too. We do ours. We, of course, we save them on, you know, CDs. You put them on CDs. Those CDs don't last long either. They may be only good for 10 or 12, 15 years, and they'll start delaminating. The archival DVDs, you can put them on, but printing them out, this new photo process, this stuff is not, I don't know if it'll last that long or not, you know, but the old ones that we got from back then, you know, they use that Kodak C76 color process, and those things kind of turn purplish looking over a period of time, so I used to put a lot of mine on slides, because slides don't deteriorate, and then convert them over to photos. And I still got to give me slides like that, though, because they stay good for years and years and years and years, and they don't lose the color like the prints on paper do. Yeah, but we started doing that. We've got, I got 12,000 or 15,000 on my computer, I guess. we got it in books and stuff, but we got a bunch. But anyway, I think that's good to do that, because like you said, you know, you don't know, you might delete that photo or might do it accidentally or something might get corrupted and then it's gone and you ain't getting it back.
Yeah, and we've already experienced that. There's a whole section of a kid's childhood. We don't know where it is. We haven't looked through all of the CDs, but we think they may be, you know, maybe gone. So, you know, we learned a lesson there. Me and Larry was talking about that last night, matter of fact, but you got to be careful with this digital stuff, because it's, you know, I've got old photos of great-grandma and granddaddy, black and whites, and they've made it this long, so, you know, it must be something about it.
F4DJC with KL4NUE. Yeah, you know, one thing, you know, I got still got photos from the 30s, I guess, black and white. I think it always amazes me, and people didn't have any money much then, but they took a lot of daggum pictures. At least my mother and daddy did. And my daddy had quite a few when he was in India during World War II. And the black and white, you know, they just last from now on, but the color photos, you know, whenever you use that process, they just fade on out. But those black and whites are still just as good as the day they took them. It looks like, you know, the stuff don't yellow, the paper don't yellow up, as long as you keep out of the heat and out of the moisture. But those old ones from the 30s and 40s, even, they're still just as good as the day they took them, they look like.
Yeah. Well, Jerry, you starting to get pretty rough on me. I must be in a bad spot, and I'm almost at my destination. But I appreciate you riding along with me this morning, if you could hear me. 73 is Jerry, and you have a wonderful day. I'll talk at you later. KL4NUE, clear.
Hi, Chad. I was probably talking a little low, too. You have a good day, 73. Glad I could ride along with you. Enjoy talking with you as usual. KL4NUE and 4DJC, clear.